I'll begin this morning with a reading from Exodus in the Hebrew Bible, chapter 21, verse 12 through 17. Whosoever strikes a person mortally shall be put to death. If it was not premeditated but came by an act of God, then I will appoint for you, says God, a place in which the killer may flee. But if someone willfully attacks and kills another by treachery, you shall take the killer from my altar for execution. Whoever strikes father or mother shall be put to death. Whoever kidnaps a person, whether that person has been sold or is still held in possession, shall be put to death. Whoever curses father or mother shall be put to death. These words are written for us in the Hebrew Bible. They are reported to be the words of God to the Hebrew people who have been liberated from slavery and are being newly created as a people, as a society. Religiously observant Jews believe that these words are the laws of God given to them to be governed by. These laws for punishing killing with killing were developed during a great period of societal rulemaking in the Near East. Similar legal codes were developed by the Babylonians in the Code of Hammurabi during the 700 BC. The rule of law itself became a sign of an organized and powerful society, a society where a person would give up their personal rights to vengeance and retribution in favor of the lawful, structured, and sanctioned punishment by the powerful state. Our individual vengeance, left unchecked by the state, might otherwise run wild with disproportionate action. Violence would be ever escalating. Individual retribution might bring about violence worse than the original crime and could even lead to the destruction of civilization itself in this endless cycle of retribution. So, after the previous reading, Exodus goes on to say this. When people who are fighting injure a pregnant woman so that there is a miscarriage, and yet no other harm follows, the one responsible shall be fined what the woman's husband demands, paying as much as the judges determine. And if any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. While it is often understood otherwise, this law is meant to limit retribution and violence. You may not give death for wound. Only a measure for measure is allowed. And only the extreme case of death, only that remedy when no other remedy has stopped the action. And the power to determine what is a crime and the power to punish moves away from the individual to the state and to its law. The laws of the Torah attempt to remove criminals, criminality, and injustice from society and to deter potential crime by showing how crime will be punished in an equal way. This philosophy is embedded in our legal system. As modern peoples with modern laws, we are still trying to cope with our own need and desire for the certainty of punishment for crimes against us, for the satisfaction of retribution when violence is committed against us, against those we love, against our very sense of safety in our homes and in our communities. We are wrestling with whether or not we can repeal the death penalty and still feel secure in ourselves and in our lives. And this is the difficult task, a very difficult task, because in many ways we are still the same people with the same needs and the same pain and concerns and worry about the world as people coming out of the wilderness of Sinai. We are still like any other people coming out of the wilderness. We want to believe that our society both protects us, gives us peace, no matter who we are, that we live in a just world. From this abstract and general view, we have particular stories which test our relationship to the death penalty. My fellow Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Megan Foley, who serves the Sugarloaf Congregation in Germantown, Maryland, is working with the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry of Maryland to repeal the death penalty in this legislative session. But she tells this story of her own experience with the death penalty. She says, "My father was assassinated 10 years ago while serving as a U.S. Foreign Service officer in Jordan. And his killers were promptly sentenced to death. Many of them have been executed. My experience," she says, "her experience has been that the deaths of my father's killers have been useless in providing any of the things that we ministers hope on behalf of victims of violence. It has not brought a sense of closure or of justice or of peace. I have found that more killing, even the killing of my father's killers, just compounded my grief and outrage at a world gone terribly awry. Martin Luther King Jr. once famously said that hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. And Megan says that she has found that to be true both personally and in her ministry. When Megan told me this story, I offered to her my own story. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, in a neighborhood that became increasingly violent as the economy deteriorated and the drug and gang culture took over. And my uncle was killed during a home invasion robbery that was an attempt to get money for drugs. The two young black males who committed the robbery and murder were caught. I was told how much my grandmother wanted the killers to suffer for taking the life of her son. She wanted more than an eye for an eye. The system of retributive justice was a limiting system for her, a code that acted to try to control her rage and pain, to hold her rage and pain within some near manageable, almost manageable expectation of justice. I can also remember the pain that my mother felt at both the death of her brother and the possibility of the end of life for the young black man she did not know. She had hoped that they would never be found. She had hoped that they might have a chance to change their lives because she believed that once young black men got into the criminal justice system in Detroit, that no matter what the sentence, they were lost forever. And she did not want that to be the legacy of her brother. The family and friends of murder victims and the victims of violence that makes the end of life, the end of all possibility, the end of all futures. Each and every one will act and feel differently about the punishment that needs to happen as the result of the death of someone they love. I cannot even begin to suggest what people should want, what people should feel. There is this depth of pain and grief. There is this need for some kind of order, a sense to be made out of the total disruption of life as you have known and understood it. And I cannot tell anyone how to feel and act in that moment. And what of the family and friends and like-minded of those who killed Megan's father or those who killed my uncle? It may seem unbelievable, but I can believe that they may feel that they have been victimized, that they have been subject to violence as well, the violence of the state. They may feel that they have been pushed into the original violent action in order to live or to survive or to get out from under. They may also come to want retribution as well. As Gandhi said, an eye for an eye, and we will all be blind. The death penalty here in the United States is so wrapped up in all our nation's history of racism and classism that its claim of any kind of fairness and justice are so easily doubted by so many. While our laws aim for equality, we know that social location can determine how a person is treated in our criminal justice system. As Van says, the expensive lawyer can make the difference. Is that justice? Is that fairness? Is that equality? Does that so taint our system that it no longer does what it's supposed to do, provide us the security that we seek? While an eye for an eye was once meant to guarantee that the strong would not be able to inflict greater punishment on the weak, the criminal justice system we have now is so corrupted by our inequalities that we can no longer really, in good conscience, believe that. Can we believe that our death penalty reflects a belief in the worth and dignity inherent in all human beings? Does it reflect respect for life and love? Does it honor the creation of which we are a part? The black or brown, the poor, are disproportionately sentenced to death in our society. And now that we have the added evidence of DNA in criminal cases, it has become even more the case that we are aware that people are convicted in error. Can we continue in confidence with a system that can kill in error? Is this justice? This is what is done in our name by our government and our society, supposedly for us to keep us safe. There are other things that could be done. We can recognize that state killings do not end crime or give so-called closure to the families of victims. We can recognize that the people now, five of them on death row in Maryland and others to come, might possibly be exonerated if we waited for more evidence, or possibly be killed and later found to be innocent. Our criminal justice system might move away from this model of retribution toward a model truly informed by a belief and a desire for correction and rehabilitation. Now, all this is not to tell you how to feel about the death penalty. It is not to say that we must all agree. Our experience, our pain, may drive us to different places. But it is to say that we must stop and think about what is being done in our name. We must hold the responsibility for those who will die because the state which we live in and support will kill them. The state is taking on our charge, doing what it is believed we would do ourselves if we could. So is this really what we choose, what we would do? In the Christian Bible, Matthew, verse 5, chapters 38 to 43, it is written, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you," Jesus says to you, "do not resist an evildoer. And if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give them your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go a mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." In the Quran, chapter 5, verse 45, it is written, "In the Torah, God prescribes for them a life for a life, an eye for an eye, a nose for a nose, an ear for an ear, a tooth for a tooth, an equal wound for a wound. If anyone forgoes this out of charity, it will serve as atonement for his bad deeds." So I ask you to consider that your representatives in the Maryland State House are nearing a decision on the repeal of the death penalty. Let your voice be heard on this issue, no matter your belief or opinion, because this issue is too important not to consider, not to wrestle with, not to engage with your whole heart and your whole mind. Life, not just a particular life, but all life, depends on you and your ability to be present to it. And in this moment, be present to it.